This is a production of Cornell University.
Okay, we're at 12:16, and probably some people will still be joining, but I think we should get started. I want to welcome everyone to the first employee assembly meeting of the first regular employee assembly meeting of the year, September 1st. We are going to start with roll. I'm going to call the meeting to order. Andrea is going to manage roll call as our executive vice chair She'll be doing roll call, and the rest of the executive committee is going to help manage this meeting. So, Andrea?
Yes, looking for Alan Mittman. Brandon Fortenberry.
Alan is here. He's having some problems with Zoom.
Okay. So we'll count him. Brenda Fisher. I see you.
I'm here. Sorry.
Brian Goodell.
Present.
Deborah Howell.
She's just joining, Andrea.
Okay. Derek Barrett.
Here.
Ellen Miller. Hey, hey, DePew.
Present.
Jackie Crew. Here's Brandon coming as well. Jamie Duong, we know is not here. Jessica Townley. Jessica Withers, we know you're here. Oh, Jackie's just being admitted. Joseph Canella. Karen Loparco. Kate Supron.
I'm here.
Kit Tannenbaum.
Here.
Christy Mahoney?
Here.
I see you. Lisa Zacharias? Marcus Brooks?
I am here.
Hi. There you go. Marcy Benda?
Hi, I'm here.
Good. And Marin Cherry? Michelle Podolak?
Here.
Stacy Coyle?
Here.
Okay. I think that's everybody. I have not forgotten anybody.
I joined late, so Jackie is here.
Okay, wonderful.
And I believe Lisa was going to be late.
Okay. And Brandon, yes, I saw you come in as well. So, and there we go.
All right. Thank you, everyone. We're going to move to the land acknowledgement. So let me make sure I'm unmuted. Yep. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Goyokono, the Cayuga Nation. The Goyokono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Goyokono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Goyokono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. So again, welcome. I'm glad to see everyone here. We have a lot of guests today. Thank you for joining us. I'm going to move to approval of the June 9th minutes. This was the only meeting we had this summer. It was a while ago. Do I have any changes or do I have a motion to approve?
I motion to approve.
Thank you. Kip motions to approve the June 9th minutes. Is there a second?
A second.
Thank you. I think I heard two people. And then next is a call for late additions to the agenda. Are there any late additions? And I will ask EA members to use the hand raise function or to raise your hand in person. We're going to be trying to keep an eye on everything, on all the screens. I'm not hearing any late additions, so we will move on to business of the day. And first up is the resolution one, the approval of our operating budget for this year. Kit, do you want to present?
Yes, hi everybody. Seeing a lot of people from Monday here and a lot of new faces. So welcome. I am the 2021-22 elected Vice Chair of Operations and Finance for the term, and it is my part of my responsibilities on the EA is to put together and the operating budget proposal and present it to you all. So this has to be done. It is traditionally done at the first academic year meeting of the first EA meeting of the new academic year. So here we are. So I'm gonna, hopefully I can share my screen, which is great. So can everybody see my screen okay?
I can see it.
Oh, now you can see my screen, I think. Okay, so here is just the verbiage. Since even though this is a budget proposal, we do have the resolution written up requesting Martha Pollack, if we approve this, requesting Martha Pollack to approve our budget. Pretty straightforward. This is in box under the resolutions folder if anyone would like to check this out. So there's that, but I know we want to get into the numbers per se. So I will pull that up. So fiscal year 22. So every year, University Relations allocates us $9,650. And right here are the different ways that I have proposed that we allocate this money. I should preface this by saying that these numbers, these allocations are not set in stone in any way. They are basically, if there were any drastic or large changes made to the allocations, we can hold another vote on if we should change those allocations. But basically, over on the left, we have all of the different expense categories. Some of these are pre-explained. We do have some allocations for committees as well, or subcommittees, I should say. Communications committee has a little bit of a larger pool because they have been doing a lot of internet advertising, like Facebook advertising. And let's see here. And then some of the other things that we support, I guess I should also say the primary expense up until COVID was having foods at meetings, at a general employee assembly meetings, because they are held, as we know, during the lunch break. And we want to, you know, thank people for coming and using their lunch break or that time in that precious middle of the day to join us. So that is usually the largest allocation on the budget. I did, because right now we're still with COVID guidelines, still having to manage not being able to have food at in-person meetings, I did knock this back a little bit to the 4325. I think the full year spending for food for meetings was last in 2019. Anyway, the largest food expense that we've had for the year was about $5,000 or $5,200. So I basically just took that number, divided it by 10, For the time being, since I know we won't be able to have food, and that's how I got to the 43.25 that you see there. And then I guess going back down the list, we have the executive expense category, space rental fees, again, related to meeting in person, our communications, our various committee allocations. Most of these have stayed the same from prior years. Elections committee, I believe I lessen that a bit just because the we do have the historical data further down on this document. And I think whatever the original allocation was not something like $500 was not being anywhere. We were not reaching anywhere near that. So I tried to spread this out to have it more appropriately match what we were actually spending in prior years. So then we get through our committees, staff recognition and awards. This has a little asterisk here because there were some expenses that we knew based on the timing of the fiscal year end, of Cornell's fiscal year end at the end of June, that would not be able to make it onto the fiscal year 21, this past term's budget. So they did have to unfortunately carry into this term's budget. President's address to staff, I just used, I believe, last year's number, which was like $207 to budget the $225 for this year. I imagine that will likely also, with so many people in all different working situations, whether remote, hybrid, in person, probably will be offered remotely. The CARE fund here has been was once a line item for the budget. I believe as of last year, it is no longer part of our budget. So we used, I guess, the employee assembly before my time would make a donation to that. And that is, we don't have that anymore. And then we have our EA staff forum support, which even if we're not having in-person meetings, I know has been a big draw in the last two terms budgets. Last term we spent about $3,000 on supporting these forums. Jamie was the vice chair for finance last year. And he's mentioned, and I need to do, I admit I need to do the official investigation. There, it looks like as Zoom has progressed with being needed to support so much online that there may be transcription services that the assembly was paying CIT to do that might have built-in functionality to do so within Zoom so that we don't need to have quite so high of an expense. So that is kind of with how everything else panned out for all of these other numbers is how we came to the $2,000 allocation. And if you look over here, I'm sure some of you have seen, we did these two. I know the $86 for communications committee, this was a carryover expense from last fiscal year. That was for Facebook advertising. I did get this verified this morning, actually, that this $97.99 was the carryover from the June George Peter Award expenses. And then these two, I need to work with Gina and Wendy on to figure out what these are specifically referring to. And I have noted that as such. So does anyone have any questions?
Yeah, Kit, there's room for play in case we are able to present, have food. We usually do pizza or whatever for the president's address. There's room for play within the budget. That's still the same, right? Because I know that was up that was up a lot higher previous terms and because we had food and venue.
Yes. Yes, I did just take the number last year, but there's absolutely room to play with that, especially if we needed to reduce the food for meetings or reduce somewhere else. There definitely is. I did notice when I was putting this together that the majority of our expenses revolve around being able to meet in person and have food. So so I guess as long as COVID guidelines prevail, we do have, there may basically, the more COVID guidelines prevail and we're not able to meet in person and have food, the more opportunity on the back end that we might have for you new opportunities to use funds for EA matters, which I don't have any ideas right now, but if anyone has any, definitely reach out to me and we can talk about it.
Thank you, Kit, for this presentation and for your careful work on the budget. I will open it up for discussion or motions. And Brian, thank you for your clarification question. Marcy, I do see your hand is up.
Yep. So I noticed that we used to donate to the CARE Fund, but we don't do that anymore. I'm just curious to find out why we don't and how much we did in previously.
Yes. My understanding is that in previous years, that amount was $450 that we donated. And I believe Gina probably can explain it better than I can. Gina, if you're here, and are you able to explain why we're no longer able to donate to the CARE Fund?
Sure. It's a good question. And as Kit just said, it was a legacy expense. The CARE Fund was originally established by the Employee Assembly, and then and many years ago, it was transferred over to HR with an appointee from the EA. Excuse me. The funds that support the EA from University Relations are meant to support the Assembly. So they're internally focused. They're for to support the work that you're doing as the volunteer effort on the Assembly that represents the staff community. They're not meant to support externally supporting other staff members, which the CARE Fund does. So it was finally just clarifying with some articulated language that helps when you're crafting the budget, know that all that $96.50 is meant to be supportive of the Assembly, not to support, whether it was the CARE Fund or another emergency fund or a particular thing that would support a staff person not on the Assembly. It just was really meant to focus it internally. I hope that helps.
Definitely. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Any other hands or motions? Brian, is it yours?
I move to approve the budget as presented.
There is a motion to approve the budget as presented.
Marcy?
I second.
Hey, did you have
been seconded?
Yeah. Am I eligible to vote on this?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, so we have a motion to approve the budget as is, and it's been seconded. So I think we can go by, can we do unanimous or should we vote with the voting buttons? We might as well get practice.
Sure, either button. Your discretion.
Oh, well. Let's get some practice.
I just realized you can see my Zoom.
Yes.
Never mind. I don't think I have access to the voting buttons right now because I'm sharing. So I will.
If you could stop the share, Kit.
Yep, stop the share. Okay. We will go ahead and vote on the budget as presented. So members, you can use the green check if you would like to vote yes. The red X in the reactions. If you,
Ellen, you can type. Oh, you can't type into the chat either. You can just tell us if you're comfortable telling us your vote.
Ellen says affirmative.
Excellent. Thank you, Ellen. Just saw that. Okay. And Gina or Wendy, are you capturing the vote?
I will now. Hang on. Don't anybody change your listing. How about if you call for any nays and then we'll know?
Are there any nays? You can do the red X in the reactions. And I don't see any myself. So the budget passes as it was presented. Thank you, Kit. Thank you, members.
Thank you, everybody.
Okay. And next on the agenda, Brandon is going to give a presentation on the University Hearing Review Board, I'm sorry. And as many of you know, Brandon is a member of the EA and he is also serving on the University Assembly as chair. Brandon?
Thank you very much, Jessica. Can you hear me okay? Good. All right. So I just wanted to talk to folks a little bit to just some past information. So I am the current chair of the University Assembly, but last year I was the chair of the Codes and Judicial Committee. As some of you may be aware, there was a change in the code of conduct here on campus from what was a campus code of conduct to what's now called a student code of conduct. In that change, we have a system in which we're having to have two different hearing review panels or boards. One that is currently seated are folks that are listening to and reviewing cases that pertain to what was the previous campus code of conduct. And what I'm going to speak about today here is what we need to do as the employee assembly in regards to what is now the student code of conduct. So I'm going to share my screen here and do a brief little presentation. This and I think.
Can I ask everyone to clear your votes so that if questions arise, we can see hands that are raised?
And let's see, do people see the slides here?
Yep.
All right. So what this is this is a recommendation, a guidance. We obviously welcome the employee assembly to I'm speaking now as the UA chair, so it's wearing different hats and I might fumble for that. But basically, the UA is asking that we provide you some guidelines and that we ask that the deadline be met of launching a solicitation for application by September 10th.
Brandon, I just want to let you know that your sound is, there's a lot of background noise.
Okay, I'm going to have to move to another spot in the building because I'm right next to a pizza oven that's being broken in. So bear with me as the screen moves and I move. Thank you for that heads up. So this is just guidance. These are suggestions that we are putting forth for the employee assembly to utilize. The code does have in it some verbiage around when this needs to happen. However, its verbiage is based on the code having been in place already and would have been ready by April 1st. So we're working with a different deadline here, and September 10th is what we're looking for. So what we are asking the employee assembly to do is solicit applications, and these are just some key points, and I'm not going to read through every bit of this, and I will share these slides with everyone here on the assembly to review in as well. But the idea is that this code that we have, our new student code of conduct, really involves and prioritizes active participation as well as a restorative justice approach to code of conduct. In fact, one of the words that you'll hear removed from the verbiage is judicial. There's no longer a judicial administration. There's an Office of Student Conduct and Community Standards. And in fact, the Codes and Judicial Committee, which I chaired, will be changing their name. So the idea here is we want you to announce an opportunity to talk to employees about why they should look to do this. And by soliciting these applications, what we are looking for the employee assembly is to provide in total what will be 15 staff appointed to the university hearing panel. Now, we obviously recommend that you seek more applications than that because there may be some applicants who don't meet the criteria, which we'll speak to. But the applicants will be sent to the director of the OSCCS, the Office of Student Conduct and Community standards, which I'll refer to the OSCCS, will be sent to them, which will then be reviewed by the Student Assembly and the GPSA executive committees to decide on the final determination of the applicant. So really all that's happening here from the Employee Assembly perspective is working with the Office of the Assemblies to send out an application on September 10th, which we have streamlined and made a little bit easier. And we'll talk about that as well as talking a little bit about some of the qualifications. Some of the key points is making sure there's no conflicts of interest, that they are, you know, in essence, hoping to have a two-year term. We understand as staff members, they may not complete that full two-year term, and we address vacancies on a regular basis. And they would have to attend some trainings to be a part of this review panel. These are some of the applicant attributes that we spoke to, and over the summer we did do a review of campus code of conduct applicants, and now these are, they're very similar for this student code of conduct applicants. And one thing to note is that all applicants that come in, are if they are selected, will be required to attend a training. This is standard in the process, and I'm really excited that the OSCCS is going to really work to offer a wide variety of timing. As you can see, there's multiple trainings available. As staff members, sometimes it's hard to do at daytime. You might need to do something after work to be a part of that volunteer effort. So they've really made it available to a lot of folks. And as I mentioned before, we streamlined it. We've reduced the questionnaire, and at the end, I have the questions that we ask, and I won't review them in depth, but I'll send the slide to everyone and ask them to submit their question and send a resume or along with a sort of a statement of interest questionnaire. It's condensed, similar to what we did over the summer. We felt it really kind of addressed the questions we were trying to define, if there were any implicit biases or concerns or questions that may lead to that applicant not being the strongest. And then obviously the resume, we found after reviewing the questionnaire that we were pretty sufficiently understanding of what the expectations were. The resume was just there as an added sort of level if necessary. All the information that comes in is anonymized by our great team at the Office of the Assemblies that you send the applications out, they come in, and then you get to review them. Now, one thing to note about just in general with the application process, and let me do this last piece, and I'll just show you that it's a four question application that we put together. Very simple, asking them to answer, you know, upload some information, a statement of interest, and talk to us about a couple of key factors of what they might do in certain situations. That's really the key piece. And I want to speak to, I'm going to stop the share here. So sort of the goal here is to find people who are not looking to join this panel because they have been impacted by it or know somebody that's impacted and they're hoping to right the wrong that was done by somebody. You know, we want people who are really looking to look at this code effectively and find ways in which to uphold the community standards that we have set forth that were agreed upon and voted on by the Board of Trustees and implemented for this past year. So again, to paraphrase, what we're asking here is to utilize an application system that is streamlined and simplified to be able to launch that application by September 10th, so that by the 24th, you are able to then send those applications to the director of the OSCCS for review in conjunction with the SA and GPSA executive committees. And with that, I will pause there and ask if there are any questions or comments from folks.
Thank you, Brandon. That was very thorough. Do we have any questions or comments from the staff?
Yes, Brian?
Oh,
sorry, that's not my job.
Yeah, I just wonder, the charge of the committee, what do they do? What is it that they are being asked to do? I'm a little bit vague on that.
Great, thank you, Brian. I apologize for not clarifying. So this is not a committee of the EA or the UA. This is the University Hearing and Review Panel. So what they do is they hear cases that ultimately most situations that come to them from, so it used to be the OJA, the Office of Judicial Administrators, now the Office of Student Conduct and Community Standards. So what happens is a student violates this code of conduct. They are then somebody submits that violation, whether that's because they were caught in the act by the Cornell police, or whether that is a staff or a faculty or a fellow student that's submitting that violation. They then are reviewed by the OSCCS, and in most cases, the vast majority of cases, the university hearing and review panel doesn't see anything to do with that case. It is all handled prior to the case getting there, whether that's through simple restorative justice actions, i.e. training, guidance, an assessment of what needs to happen through the OSCCS. But in the event that that isn't the case, and the student, which always has the opportunity, they always have the ability to ask that their case be heard in front of a panel, then this university hearing review panel would be selected from the staff, faculty, and student cohorts to put together a panel that would hear the case and make a decision based on the student code of conduct as it pertains to that action. Does that clarify the question?
It does. And what would the time be for participating in that committee?
So it's asked for a 2-year commitment. And in the slide deck, it speaks to some of the time when the cases are typically going to be heard. They look to try and set those timelines up, as right now they're targeting Tuesdays and Fridays from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Those are the general timelines that they're looking to do. Now, they may find that they need to adjust that because that was based on, past experience and what they hope to do, and trying to get away from late night hearings, which a lot of these cases in the past. But that's the current time that they're looking for folks.
Hey, thank you.
And Brandon, can you confirm what the application deadline will be once that's launched?
So the launch we ask is September 10th with a deadline of September 24th for all applications to have been sent. Now, if you feel that you would like to review the application before sending them to the director, that's within your purview to do so. You alternatively can simply send forth all folks who apply to the position and they will do the review. The EA will not be making the final selections. They will simply be putting forth the submissions of application to the director's office, and they would make the decision. So there is no need for you to do an initial review, but if you chose to, you could reduce the timeframe they have to apply by a few days to give yourself as the employee assembly an opportunity. If you wanted to select a group of folks to review those in advance before submitting them, you could, or you can, as I stated, just simply send forth all applications that come in and let them do that review process.
I think I missed a key part of this. Why do the applications need to come through the EA at all? Why can't people just apply directly? Because you said that there's a website that's going to be set up correct?
So the current code, and I'll defer to Gina, who's also very versed in this, more so than I, but the current code, the student code of conduct, does have in it verbiage that states that each assembly and senate is required to solicit applications to send to the director's office. So it is written in the code. And that was really something that was changed as a result of input from the assemblies and senates, that people wanted to not lose that connection to this panel. While it was shifting from a campus code to a student code of conduct, it still impacts every contingency, because as I mentioned, a staff or faculty could be either the someone who has the situation perpetrated upon them, or whatever it may be. And so they are able to bring forth violations. So that's why it's important to have everyone involved. And Gina can perhaps provide additional clarification.
Yeah, Gina.
Thank you. I think Brandon, you stated it very, very well. The essential difference is the change in the codes, that the process largely should remain the same as it has in the past, where our office, the Office of the Assemblies, would promote and send out emails to the whole campus community saying that we were receiving applications. It would have a Qualtrics link if you were interested in it. You would apply, and they would be reviewed by through a different mechanism. But it wasn't, there was no ownership from the different constituencies to make sure that either you were promoting it specifically to staff or having a hand at all in the, not just the promotion of, but the composition of the very important bodies. So it's just the process largely remains the same. We'll still be doing all of the same things, but rather than it sort of being a whole campus community portal for receiving applications, it's an opportunity for the EA to have a touch point on that. And again, making sure that there is a specific number of staff that need to be on these boards. Brandon, help me. I think it's
15 staff.
Yeah. 15 staff. And you should know who they are. It just gives you an opportunity to know who they are, or at least have a hand in that information. So I think it's a great thing for each of the constituent assemblies to, you're the ones actually putting forth the recommendations to be reviewed. Does that help?
Yes, Kit.
Thanks.
I was on mute.
Hello?
Oh, hi, Alan.
Hi.
Can we let Alan go?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Shall I go?
Yes, please.
Okay. Hello, Brandon. Nice to see you again. I was wondering if the panel is going to have an advisor in connection with the hearings that they hold. I gather there's going to be a constituency type of panel. Do they have an administrative or legal advisor in connection with it? And do the people who come before the panel have any advisor, whether it be administrative or legal?
Those are great questions, Alan, and I'll do my best to answer those, and we'll defer to Gina if I get these wrong. But ultimately, this panel will report into the director's office, the Office of Student Conduct and Community Standards, which is a change from the previous code and how that reporting structure goes. And as it pertains to advisors, absolutely, students have the ability to receive an advisor. And I'm forgetting the name of that group, and I'll defer to Gina on the name of the group, but there is a group that is what they do. They are there for students to advise them on what they suggest to review the case and the information. Additionally, students always have the opportunity to retain outside counsel. That's always available to them, but they do have available a student group. And Gina, if you could help me with the name of that group, it's been a while.
So it formerly was a judicial codes counselor. Now it's the respondents codes counselor. There also are administrative chairs elected by, they're the faculty members that are appointed by the president to serve as sort of the, not the administrative chair, the actual chair of the UHRB or UHRP, I guess now is what we're calling it. And there is an elected from within administrative chair to help with sort of the organizational things. But those, even though they'll change slightly because of the new structure, those positions of chairpersonship still remain. But again, this is all new, and it was conceived largely with a whole lot of community input from all constituent groups, with the effort of making this a less legalistic, non-judicial student code. So sort of figuring all that out with the first time out.
Well, it sounds very reasonable to me. The panel is going to be basically Gina and Brandon fact finders and make a report.
No, the panel is not doing any investigation. They're simply hearing the facts that are presented. The fact finding happens outside of their purview completely. And they would simply be hearing the facts of the case. They would be presented in a variety of different ways, as I mentioned, whether there is a respondent code counselor or outside counselor, or however the student has many options that they can decide of how they want the case to be heard. They would hear the case and hear the facts in regards to it. And then again, that panel is, it's not the entire 25 students, 15 faculty and 15 staff. That number allows for a selection of a number per case. And I believe it's, is it two from each, Gina, or two student, one staff, one faculty?
I think it's two students, one staff, one faculty. Yeah. And the, they would be convened as a panel for each hearing.
Yep, and then that panel would then hear the case and make the decision based on the facts, but would not be doing any fact finding.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Alan. Kit, thank you for letting Alan go. Do you want to go ahead with your question?
You're on mute, Kit.
Did it again. So what... To clarify, I might have missed something. So to clarify my understanding, we as the assembly, as the employee assembly, may promote joining this board to our respective constituencies. And then we as in our own representative seats receive applications and then we pass them ones that we have deemed to be worthy of additional consideration, we pass that along?
I can, great question there, Kit. So it wouldn't be individual representatives receiving this. So what happens is Gina and Wendy will put together a communication that can be sent on behalf of the employee assembly to all employees. And then they have that listserv, they send that out to everyone. And then what the next step is that you as a representative could reach out to specific folks and say, hey, I really encourage you to look at this. I think this is a great opportunity, really important for us to have your voices, whomever you see as great opportunities. It will hit everyone, but you can do some focused research. And then the applications would then come into the Office of the Assemblies, and then that would be transmitted to the Executive Committee. And that's where I said, again, there is no clear delineation or bylaw or regulations as to how you then transmit those applications. They can be reviewed if you choose to, or it can simply be solicit the applications and transmit them to the director. So that might be something that here as the employee assembly, you could make a decision on.
Okay. Okay, so we can promote to our constituencies if we personally choose to encourage certain someone's to apply, then we can, and then those applications will be sent.
Absolutely.
By the Office of the Assemblies. Okay.
As an example, the Student Assembly really wanted to focus on having a diverse representation. So really focus their communications to ensure there was diverse representation, that those organizations or groups that may have been underrepresented in the past panels, they really wanted to focus on those. So that's something that was undertaken by the Student Assembly to ensure there was that diversity. So just an area of opportunity to promote to different groups.
Okay. Great, thank you.
Any other questions? I don't see any other hands. If not, thank you, Brandon. We'll look forward to that and do our best.
All right, thank you so much. And Gina, I guess if I can get clarification then at this point, unless there's any objection, I guess we would just need to decide if we would move forward with that solicitation as we've sort of outlined as a process. Is that correct, Gina?
Yes.
Would that require that we have some sort of motion here?
I think it's while it's fresh in everyone's mind, I think that would be the most the best way to do it is just, especially since we're the first time out, I think as long as we have not just general consensus and notes from a meeting, but if there was a motion to approve that plan as Brandon laid out, that would be the best thing. Okay. Thank you, Brandon.
Thank you for clarifying that, Brandon. Do I have any motions? Brian, your hand
was up first, but then I don't know where she went.
I took my hand down.
Oh, Brian?
Yeah, I moved that motion, yes, as presented.
So we have a motion to move forward as presented. Is there a second?
I second the motion.
Thank you, Brenda. And I think we can do unanimous consent on this one. So unless I hear any concerns, we will move forward by unanimous consent, and I'm keeping an eye on the screen. Not hearing any dissent, we will move forward with the plan for the University Hearing Review Board applications as presented. Thank you, Brandon. All right. Next, we are up to committee reports and updates. And I know not all committees have met this summer. So if you haven't, your chair is welcome to just say you don't have an update. But let's begin with executive committee, which would be Andrea.
Hi, we've been meeting extensively, planning not only some of the discussions with the ongoing meetings that we have with Mary Opperman as part of the EA leadership. We've chosen to expand that meeting with Mary Opperman and Reginald Harris to all of the EA exec committee members so that everybody knows what's happening and what has a voice and discussion. And so those have been going very well. We also, have been spending a lot of time planning the EA retreat that happened yesterday. And boy, our EA chair, Jessica, was able to definitely pivot and punt and move along just because we had a last minute change to all virtual, and then we had some scheduling movement that would allow us to be able to do that. Going forward, we'll be looking at a lot of discussions with what type of forum/initiatives that we're talking about as the EA going forward. And we'll also be talking about the priorities pool and getting that ready to go. Kit, your hand is up.
Yes, I wanted, when you were talking, I thought it might be helpful to clarify for the body. I think traditionally the employee assembly chair and vice chair have had, I think about monthly meetings directly with Mary Opperman and and the staff elected trustee, which we know this year is Reginald. And Andrea and Jessica have graciously extended that invitation to me, Ellen, and Lisa as the other part of the executive board, and we have been going. So I wanted to provide some background on what that was.
Great, thank you. I think that's in the interest of time. We have a lot of other discussions. Jessica, am I missing anything?
Nope, great job.
Great.
Any other questions for Andrea? I am not seeing any. So we will move forward to Benefits and Policy Committee, which is Brian.
Hi, yes, we met yesterday it was our first meeting. So since the break, did some introductions of everybody, all the members. Our committee's full right now, but we always have room for others. We talked about that and what we want to get out of the committee. We then went to, we reviewed previous BPC items that we've covered and guests that we've had. We received a couple correspondences, so I wanted to the committee's input on them. One was on the pet policy. So we looked at the pet policy a little bit from correspondence that we received asking about pets on campus. We had extensive talk about that. We also looked at another correspondence. It talked about local providers dropping the Aetna. And we need more info on that. If anybody's heard of anybody, any local providers dropping out now, let us know. But for right now, we know of one only. So I don't know if it's widespread or what's going on. It was a chiropractic that did it. But so we kind of lacked information to go further on that. So we looked into it. Under new business, we had some talk about New York State paid family leave and how it affects temps and how to opt out of that program if they choose. And there's a process for that, but that's not part of Cornell. That's part of New York State paid family leave, I guess. And they get the application through Cornell. So we had a long meeting, but it was a good meeting, a lot of discussion, and some stuff came out of it. And we're looking forward to the next meeting. Who knows what's going to be on the agenda there. It was all good. Am I missing anything for the people that were there?
Andrea has her hand up with a question, Brian.
Hi, Andrea.
Hey, just as a side note, the pets on campus policy is being modified to be animals on campus policy. And I'm working on that extensively with the University Compliance Office, and my role is ADA coordinator for facilities and campus services. To clarify the roles of what service animals are, what emotional support animals are, and where they all sort of fit. So if you have any ongoing question for that, please let's talk on a side note.
I would love to talk to you on a side note about that and share the notes that I have from the discussion we've already had. I think it'd be beneficial, beneficial for you as well. So thank you.
Perfect.
Great. Any other questions for Brian? The Benefits and Policy Committee? All right. I'm not seeing any. So we'll go forward to Communications, Outreach, and Recognition Committee, which is led by Ellen.
Hello, everyone. I always talk a lot today. I'm going to try not to. We met only once over the summer at the end of July to plan for a summer EA Voice newsletter, which was published in August prior to the Staff Appreciation Street Fair, because we wanted to get another avenue to advertise that event out. So we did launch the newsletter in early August. I don't remember the exact date. Aside from the newsletter content, we did discuss the future committee structure that we're hoping to accomplish for this term. And I will be putting a meeting on the books probably next week, considering now if we may want to advertise for Brian's code of conduct initiative, unless that's going to be a separate communication. I'll touch base with Gina about that anyway. So I'm going to put a meeting on the books for probably next week after Labor Day for the committee. And we would like to get some more stabilized structure in regards to individual representatives leading the communications initiative, the outreach initiative, and the recognition initiative within our committee. And then I also am desperately in need of someone who will volunteer to be a secretary slash notes keeper, because it's not my forte. And I really need someone to do that. I'm a talker, not a writer. Other than that, I think not too much to report on. I know that the individuals within our committee who have worked on recognition in the last term are very eager to start moving forward for this term. So we'll discuss that, I'm sure, at our next meeting. Our next initiative regarding recognition, we need to start considering the staff of the EA Appreciation Award, which usually goes hand in hand with the president's address to staff, which I don't believe we have a date on yet, although maybe Gina can confirm. No, she's shaking her head no. So that usually happens in the fall around October sometime. So that will be an EA award that we have coming up. And then we also are looking to launch our new staff award for integrity and inclusion pretty soon. So that's our goals coming up. And like I've said before, anyone who's interested in helping out with the committee, we're more than happy to have you. Please reach out to me. Thank you.
Thanks, Ellen. Any questions for Ellen and the Communications, Outreach, and Recognition Committee? I don't see any hands. So we'll move forward to the Education Committee, which is chaired by Marcy Benda, and she.
I'm here.
You are still there.
I am. I'm still here. The education committee has not met yet. We need to plan a meeting and also verify who is on the education committee. I believe we still need members. So please contact me if you're interested in being on this wonderful committee, and we'll try and meet at everyone's availability as soon as possible.
Thanks, Marcy. Any questions for Marcy? I am not seeing any. So next up is Elections Committee. And Marin, you are here and Jamie is out. Are you able to give an update?
Yeah, I'll give a sort of an abridged update just because I don't, I'll admit I'm not sure if potentially other conversations have been ongoing, but I'll say that the Elections Committee did meet occasionally over the summer. And as of our most recent meeting, we were evaluating calendars for the special election this fall. As of the most recent communication, I believe that we have decided as a committee to move forward with the week of October 18th as the week for voting in that special election this fall. And we should have additional information once we can reestablish a regular meeting cadence here now that things have sort of gotten started.
Thank you, Marin. Any questions for Marin? Oh, Ellen's hand went up.
I'm actually going to call out Kit and ask Kit to ask her question that she presented to the exec committee about election, because that was really good. So I wonder if the elections committee is planning something.
Yes, I was thinking of this more on an ongoing basis. Maybe not. I think the question kind of was geared more around a staff forum, but I was thinking about the idea of proposing some type of like small, like informal info session on the employee assembly and what it is and how to apply. Just like any of, I do scheduling for Willard Street Hall, just like I see so many requests at this time of year from student groups wanting to get their name out there and encourage people to join their club or whatever that is, if that might be a thing that we could do for prior to being candidates being able to even sign up to run.
Kit, that's a really it's a really excellent idea and a good sort of question. I have to admit, I will be the first one to admit that I currently do not have open all of the documentation that I would like to have open to be able to address exactly what it is we have on the calendar. But I do know that timing was picked for, there were a variety of smaller events and milestones. And that timing was selected to allow us to fit all of those in. And if I remember correctly, there were opportunities. We specifically wanted to give time so that we could figure out how to encourage participation, coordinate our communications, and make sure that we did give staff the opportunity to explore what the EA is and what running sort of looks like and can mean for them. So I have the note made, and I will see if I can get back to you once I can find and open all of the documentation. I admit I probably should have had open.
And you're fine. Honestly, I was thinking more long-term. I know that you and the committee are working, I'm sure are going to get this, have all these things. And that's great that you are already having that stuff in the pipeline. I think I was thinking more of long-term, especially once life resumes to be more in person. So.
Understood. Thank you.
Yeah. And thank you, Ellen, for reminding me of that.
It's an ongoing question in Elections Committee. Anything else for Marin? Okay, we will move to Employee Welfare Committee. Christy.
Hello. The committee had spent the summer brainstorming our priority and focus for the fall. We reviewed the priorities poll from the last session, last term, and arrived at a focus on mental health, staff burnout, and improving staff morale as our focus. This meeting that we had this morning, just prior to our assembly meeting, we received a presentation from Michelle Arteby on mental health of employees and initiatives, fall initiatives and priorities of the work life group, and a presentation by Ashley Miller on the programs that she, staff recognition programs that she's involved with. Big kudos to Ellen came out of that presentation. Thanks so much, Ellen, for all your support of those recognition programs. And we'll be exploring ways in which we can use Ashley's programming as support for the issues of mental health and staff burnout. So we'll be exploring that in the future. We also had a conversation around reflection and regeneration circles, opportunities that may exist, and possibilities for the future there. Anyone on the committee want to offer any additional comments or?
Thanks. That's all I have. Thanks, Chrissy. Any questions for Chrissy and the Welfare Committee?
This is my first meeting. Is this like anyone can ask, or is it EA members?
Nope. As long as the EA members don't have a question, we can
okay, go cool. ahead to I'll you. Wait to make sure. Sorry.
Go ahead.
I wondered if the committee has any sort of focus on employees who are in Cornell IT, we're permanently remote now, basically. And I wondered if that's come up or in your committee discussions. Employees who are not coming back to campus, not always by choice. Just, I wondered if that had come up where we have a lot of internal discussions about some things that have affected morale. And I just wondered if that's something that y'all are discussing. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks, Allison. I think I'll ask our committee members to speak up as well, but I think that the varying work, I don't know what you call it, strategies that are developing become a part of the conversation all the time. Each issue ends up discussing these different work scenarios. And I don't know that we've had a focused discussion around impacts of employees who used to be resident on campus who are now shifted to fully remote, but I appreciate the suggestion and would invite you to the next committee meeting if you wanted to, and we could initiate a conversation around that. Anyone else from the committee want to speak about that?
Andrea, did I see your hand?
Yeah. I think that's a great suggestion, Chrissy. I think we've talked about a lot of issues, I think, related to that, especially over the past year. I think the Employee Welfare Committee has definitely taken a leadership role in talking about working at home solutions that we thought was going to be a month or two at the beginning that turned into certainly long-term issues. But I think there are also issues of people that don't want to return to campus, as well as people who do but are not. So I think that it's all in line with a lot of the discussions that the Welfare Committee has done. And I think it's an important continued discussion because it's not done. It's not over. I think there are many other elements of it. And thank you, Allison, for raising it and helping because I think we want to hear from folks that are affected by it. So thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. Well, Allison, I'm sending you a meeting invite now.
I want to just add also my agreeance with that. Like, we have been working over the last few years now trying to be more inclusive, to include employees who work at our Geneva campus, who work at our New York City Tech campus, to make sure that we're including all of those employees. But now we have a whole new workforce that didn't exist before, which are Cornell Ithaca employees that just aren't physically on campus. And I think that, you know, one of the Cornell missions, the One Cornell mission, to, you know, be inclusive and to be one global family, I think that that is, that needs to be definitely brought to the forefront, and there needs to be more discussion about that. It certainly wasn't anything that we expected, but now we face it. So it's something new that needs to certainly be considered.
Thank you. Great conversation. All right, I don't see any other hands, so I think we can move on. That is all of our committees. Oh, Brandon, you just put your hand up.
Sorry, that was a fast one, and sorry if the audio is a little rough. I'll try to speak loudly, but in regards to what you just said there, Ellen, Christine, I've sent you the email from UA Communications around staff who are concerned about the lack of hybrid options for parking permits. I think that's a really important subject that, you know, it's the same thing, Ellen, you said, it wasn't something we thought of, it wasn't something that was designed in the process and the policies and the procedures, but there are now employees who are expected to pay a full price for our parking permit and work here 2 days a week. There are people who, and unfortunately, the changes that were made to the parking did not address that. They actually, the daily decision rates for employees are actually more expensive than buying the permit itself. And so I understand what they gave the response is that is not intended to be an option for, because it would encourage students to just do so. But I think there needs to be some way in which an employee who is working hybrid be able to submit that information and be eligible for a hybrid permit, because there are many staff now who are impacted by that. And I think it's a benefit to the university to have less cars on campus. If I'm going to pay for a full parking permit, I might just drive in just to say I'm using my permit. Why not give them that opportunity? So I think it's something that we should really look to take up here in the EA.
Brandon, we'll add that to the agenda.
Thank you, Brandon. All right, so let's move on. We have, it's 1:22, so we do have a few minutes for new business open, and I will open it up for discussion. If members have something they want to bring up, put your hand up, and we're watching, we're all on one screen now, so it's easier for me to keep an eye on hands. I saw.
Are you raising your hand, Lisa? Okay. Lisa and then Kit.
I just want to be a smartass and say I've recently seen some openings over at Ithaca College, and I know they don't pay for parking. Just saying.
Lisa. Go ahead, Kit.
Going off of that, I feel like I've, as an Ithaca College alum, I feel like I've heard that it hasn't been completely off the table for IC employees. Anyway, Brandon, my question is for you. I was thinking about it. Would you be able to share some of the tactics that you said that the student assembly was able to use when they were recruiting the UHRB to be able to better reach underrepresented populations?
I think I don't see Gina still on here. She could speak to that a little bit more, but in essence, there were specific groups that they reached out to really promote this. And I think that Gina could speak to what those groups were, because there was a concern around the representation on there. So Gina, do you have that information that you could share?
Sure, just anecdotally, it was the representatives for each of the more identity-based seats, or, you know, in our case, the colleague network groups, worked very hard with at the student assembly. They fund the student organizations, and so there's what we call umbrella organizations, and under each of those umbrella orgs are many of the undergraduate student orgs. And so the SA members worked very hard and directly with the umbrella organizations so that they could make sure that their the organizations underneath them knew about these opportunities. They were, you know, they met with a lot of folks individually and in small groups to try and really promote the opportunities. And they had a very good result doing that. So it was more of a grassroots effort to touch base with the populations that would not have necessarily seen this or felt specifically and intentionally included and for that kind of outreach.
Great, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And I would say that immediately when Brandon was presenting, I thought of the CNGs, and we had presentations from them in our last term, and I would like to continue to work, you know, closely with them going forward. Brandon, is your hand up separately?
Yeah, it is. It is up separately. I wanted to just share with folks that. So I chaired my first university assembly meeting last night, which I thought was a pretty good success. And when there was a pretty lengthy conversation around a resolution that was presented, that I would encourage folks to be aware of and to provide feedback to the university assembly as it pertains to the requirements of vaccination for faculty and staff, which there currently is not. And so I put a link here in the chat for the resolution that has been presented. I will say the conversation was not overwhelmingly in support of the resolution as it is written. And the sponsors have heard that feedback and are seeking to make changes to this resolution. And I think Jessica did a really incredible job of summing up the conversation in that it was about, the resolution is about safety. It was, that's the heart of this, is how do we make our campus safe? And many folks felt that the resolution didn't necessarily address that effectively, and there are other methodology and tactics. And so what I would encourage you all to do is review this resolution as it is. And if there are other things that you think the university assembly should be looking at, and obviously we could, as an employee assembly, look to take up similar resolutions about promoting the safety of our campus. I just wanted to make sure that you all were aware of that and that your voices were heard. Jessica and Marcy and Deborah and David all did an incredible job speaking to this, and I wanted to make sure others were aware.
Thank you for bringing that up. I do think would be good to get feedback, and you did an excellent job chairing your first UA meeting last night.
Thank you.
I did see hands go up.
Brian
and Ellen.
I just had a question. Did you get done on time, Brandon?
It was 2 minutes over.
Oh man.
And I promise. I'm gonna defer. Gina was trying to, we were trying to work out something, and I tried to just end the meeting and move on, but she's like, well, let me give you just this last clarification. I think that was the 2 minutes.
It was totally on me. He would have been on time.
Ellen and then Andrea.
Brandon, I would like to know how, what is the best way for employees to provide feedback on that resolution? Because I think, or how can we share it with our constituents to also provide feedback on that resolution? Because I think that is a very hot topic among staff populations. So feedback would be great to have.
Yeah, absolutely. You're welcome to send that to myself, Jessica Withers, David Heiner, Marcia Binda, or Deborah Howell. Any of us are as representatives on the University Assembly would be happy to send that information forward. Additionally, you can send that to the Office of the Assemblies, and they can get that information to the sponsors, any one of those avenues. But I encourage you to share this with your constituencies to hear their input and feedback.
Andrea?
Yeah, I don't want to make us late, certainly, and be responsible for that. But I just am, Brandon, I'm looking through the resolution. Thank you for including it in the chat. You said that it was not received well. Could you speak a little bit more about what the issues are that it was not received well?
So I won't say that it wasn't received well, just that there wasn't an overwhelming there wasn't an overwhelming support of it as it has written. Much of the dialogue was around some of the hurdles and the concerns around a mandate of this type and the efficacy that it would provide as it pertains to safety. Because if you look at 90% of our staff are vaccinated at this point, so it is a small percentage, roughly around 800. Staff, and there was a point brought up that I thought was really, really thoughtful to say that, you know, those who aren't vaccinated are actually getting tested twice a week right now. So they're actually more in tune with whether or not they have a positive COVID case among the unvaccinated at this time, being that the testing is a little bit reduced. And so that was one of the points that was brought up, was really around testing and how we can ensure that, that's an aspect that's included as it pertains to safety, as well as some of the hurdles that come with a mandate of this type, and that other universities that have done this mandate have often offered opt-out of the mandate. So it's less of a mandate and more of a written mandate with options to get out.
I'm gonna pause here because it is 1:30. So we either need a motion to adjourn or a motion to extend. Brian, did you just put your hand up?
I didn't, but I will move to adjourn.
So we have a movement to adjourn. Is there a second?
Second that, yes.
Lisa seconds that. And unless I hear something, we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.